it's always like a new technique you're trying to do, because you know you have to surprise your opponents, and also it's like fun to learn new techniques. That's what judo is all about. There's just so much to learn, you know, you're learning something new every day.
Welcome, friends, to season 2 of the Judo Edit podcast. I'm so glad you've tuned in today because I have on the show with me Hannah Martin. She's a national representative from the United States of America. Hannah has been competing on the world stage since 2004. She's won 17 international gold medals at 63 kilograms and is currently competing on the international judo circuit in the lead up to the 2020 Olympic Games. So, how are you doing, Hannah?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm super excited to talk to you. And we're chatting under some pretty strange circumstances, because at the moment, you should actually be in a judogi, probably warming up somewhere for the Rabat Grand Prix. But unfortunately, it's been cancelled due to the coronavirus outbreak. So what's the last week been like for you, prepping for a comp and, you know, getting all in that mindset, but then having surprise changes last minute?
It was so weird because I was getting ready to just travel on Wednesday. And I think we found out on Tuesday that it was canceled. So I like went to training on Tuesday and I was like, I just felt like I had no motivation because I was like, oh, I was supposed to compete this weekend and now like it's canceled. So it was just very strange. But also like I'm happy, you know, it's you know, health is like the number one thing. So like it is good that it was canceled and that we're being safe. But it was just, this whole thing is just, it's unpredictable, you know?
Yeah. And it's so weird because I feel like it's never happened before. Well, at least not since I've been following the judo. So yeah, that's good. Has it affected your preparation in terms of like, are you sort of worried about training at all or?
Yeah, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones. I don't have to cut weight. So it's okay. I wasn't cutting weight or anything. I was just, you know, just training. So I'm actually heading to Russia next week if it's not canceled, hopefully. So it just gave me like an extra week to train and prepare for the Russian Grand Slam next week. So I'm just trying to be positive about it.
Yeah, fingers crossed that it goes ahead. And yeah, I actually saw that you were taking a really positive stance. So yeah, good on you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we get into some of the meatier questions, let's start with some really easy questions just to sort of build a framework of who Hannah Martin is. So where is your hometown and where are you currently based?
So I'm actually from upstate New York. It's a really funny name. It's called Schenectady. And I'm currently living in Hanover, Germany.
Great. I'll probably dig into that a little bit further a little bit later. First of all, with your judo, are you a righty or lefty?
I'm left-sided.
Left. And what's your favorite throw?
My favorite throw, I guess, would be Taiyotoshi.
I see. And are you a tea drinker or a coffee drinker?
Definitely coffee drinker. I'm drinking coffee right now.
So, so good. I love coffee as well. I feel like we're speaking the same language now. Okay. And if you don't have to make weight, oh, which you sound like you don't, what's your all-time favorite?
I guess I would have to say ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah,
I scream like almost every day, which is like a horrible thing, but it makes me feel good. So
yeah, for sure. And like, you know, if you need a little bit of that pleasure to keep you sane amongst all that training, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's I always feel like after a hard day's of work, hard day of training, I always deserve to have a big bowl of ice cream after. So so sure. I usually do it.
And what song did you listen to before your last competition fight?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually don't remember. It probably was like a Linkin Park song. I always listen to them. They always get me like in the fighting mode.
Yeah, get you in the zone.
Great.
So I've heard that you started judo in order to prove a point to your dad. how old were you when you started judo, and what was the story behind that?
So I was 8 years old. My brother was 6. My dad did judo previously, like when he was younger. So he wanted to get my younger brother into judo because he thought it was a good idea. Of course, he wanted to share the love of this for the sport with my brother. But since I was a girl, he didn't believe that I should do the sport because it was like, you know, during, I think even like, you know, 20 years ago, it was a little bit like women weren't really like doing martial arts sports or like wrestling and stuff like that. So he didn't really like think I should do it. So I kind of, I like begged him to do it and he like reluctantly let me try, and yeah, I ended up staying in judo and my brother ended up quitting, which is hilarious. So I did judo like in spite of my dad, and now it's like, oh, I'm still doing judo and I'm not proving a point anymore, and now it's like, you know, I love it and like it's part of my life. But like in the beginning, yeah, it was like, hey, I'm gonna be better than my brother, because my brother actually was better than me. He would win tournaments and I would lose tournaments, and So the whole time, like when I was younger, I was just trying to prove a point to my dad that I could do this. He didn't believe in me.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
That's so determined for a kid as well. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know what was wrong with me when I was 8 years old, but it's actually really cool because, I mean, it brought me to where I am today.
What was wrong with you? It sounded like something was right with you.
yeah, exactly.
If you fought your brother now, would you beat him?
No way. He's he doesn't do judo, but he's still pretty strong. He knows judo, and he will, no, it's impossible. Yeah.
He's still got those instincts, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So over in the US, I guess judo is not one of the mainstream sports. Growing up, what was it like doing judo, being really committed to it and trying to explain to other people that you're committed to this strange sport?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I really hated explaining it to everyone, even my friends at school, because they're like, oh, why can't you go to the, you know, movies or hang out with us? Because I would always go to practice instead. Like, so they don't really understand because it's not in school. I'm like, well, if you guys do basketball, you guys always train after school. I just train at a different time. But they never understood. Yes. So it's like really annoying because first off, when you say judo, everyone's like doing like the karate chop things, you know, they're making like, and I'm like, no, it's not judo. And I get like, I have to explain it. And yeah. And then like battling the whole thing where it's like, why are you doing this? Why are you wearing like pajama clothes when you're competing? And like, it's just like not a mainstream sport. So like no one really understands like why you do it, because like you don't get a scholarship with it. You don't really get any recognition with it. So you have to like really love the sport to do it. That's what I always tell everybody, but it's an amazing sport. And I really wish it was more popular in the US.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess like it's similar in, over here in Australia, like you said, you say judo and people do the karate chops, and sometimes like people come up to me and say, oh, how's the karate going? And I can't be bothered to correct them. And I'm like, yeah, the karate's going well.
Yeah. At some point in your life, you're just like, not even going to try anymore.
Yeah. So growing up as a junior, when was the first time you realized that you wanted to take judo seriously? You wanted to go to the Olympics? And, you know, when did you start setting big goals for yourself?
I actually was going to quit judo after the Junior World Championships in 2006. Oh, really? They were in Dominican Republic. Yeah, yeah. Like I wanted to quit. I wanted to have the whole college experience, like, you know, like probably seeing like all the American movies and stuff. But yeah, I wanted to like quit judo and go to the university. But I went to the Junior Worlds and I saw the level of judo, and I saw the commitment of all the judo players from all over the world. And I was like, wow, I want to be like them. I want to be at this level. Cause I wasn't at that level when I went to Junior Worlds. I wasn't at a high level. Like I was just doing judo for like 2 or 3 times a week just for fun. And I was just like the top athlete in the US. So I got to go to Junior Worlds. So I think going to Dominican Republic really like opened my eyes. And I was like, wow, like I want to be better. I want to do good. I want to be a high level. And that's when I really started taking judo like a lot more seriously.
So that was sort of the starting point. Where did your training ramp up, or what happened then?
Yeah, I started training more. I started training twice a day. I started doing more running and lifting. And I just really decided to dedicate like my life to judo and not just like as for fun. Because before I just did judo for fun. And yeah, I loved competing. I liked traveling. But I just did it for fun.
Yeah, for sure. And when you were talking about, you know, the college experience and, well, you'd be a teenager at that stage.
Yeah,
right?
I was like, I think I was 17 or 18 at that point.
Did that mean like you can't, you know, go out and party every night? Or I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what were you giving up?
Like usually after you graduate from high school, you move away from home, you live in a college dorm, and then you just dedicate your life to studying. And, you know, I guess it's partying, hanging out with your friends, being in the real world adult kind of thing. So I decided to not do that. Like all my friends are moving away to college, and I decided to stay home and live with my parents, but and work like, you know, like a part-time job, and of course train full-time. So that was my decision.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny how that sort of gets branded as like, you know, the college experience, because it's, I guess, the norm. It's like, oh, the real world, where the real world is sort of anything that you make it. Like just because you're not doing the normal thing doesn't mean you're living a fake world.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, you know, and I'm like really happy that I took this path in my life, because I feel like I have experience way more than I ever would have experienced doing the college lifestyle. So I'm very happy that I decided to do this.
Exactly. So I guess any competitive judoka on the international circuit, the Olympics is always, you know, the pinnacle and the dream. So let's talk about going back to 2008. It's just before the Beijing Olympics. You're 20 years old and you're fighting for a spot on the Olympic team. As I understand it, you came very, very close. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, you know, my whole goal going into, it was like we had the Olympic trials then. That was before they came out with the whole Olympic qualification system. So it was like the top eight in each division got to go to the Olympic trials and compete for the number one spot, compete for that spot for the team. So my whole goal going in there was just not to lose first round. I was like, you know what? I just want to go there and just show them that I'm ready for the next Olympics, you know? So my whole goal was to just win my first fight, and I ended up going to the final, which was awesome. So, and in the final, I only lost by one penalty. That's when you can lose by penalties. I lost by one shido, and it was just like so eye-opening to myself that, oh, like I dedicated the whole 3 months before the Olympic trials to judo and to eating correctly and you know, training, doing everything 100% correct, and I almost made it. And I was like, oh my god, like if I just, you know, do this for the next time, the next quad, I'll make it. But at this point in time, I was 57 kilos, so that was also like the thing for the next time for 2012. That's why also I had a little bit of trouble. But yeah, it was really like, it was very, I guess, motivating for me to do that, because my whole goal was to just win my first fight.
Yeah, for sure. That's pretty cool that, you know, you exceeded your own expectations so much, and you can see how like directly the connection between your effort and that output there. Mm-hmm. So you became the Olympic alternate, is that right? So you won your next fight?
Yeah, I was the alternate. So I lost the final, then I beat I think I had another fight and I won that fight. And yeah, so I was the Olympic alternate for 2008.
Yeah, that's so cool. And it actually sort of amazes me, the mental shift that goes from, you know, having to, you know, lose a fight and essentially lose that Olympic spot to having to reset in order to win the next one, or to be ready to fight again to try and win the next one. So I know it's a while ago, but what did you have to say to yourself in between those matches in order to keep your head up and to keep fighting?
You know, it's such a long time ago. And I actually, you know, when I was competing for this Olympic spot, I didn't really understand what I was competing for. You know, I was like really young and I didn't really, you know, I knew what the Olympics were, but I was like, just like, oh, I'm here at a competition, so I just want to win every fight in front of me. So I didn't really like think about the fight that I lost so much. I was just like, oh wow, I was really close to beating her, and I always lost to this girl. She was a lot older than me, and so I was just like very happy with the fight, and my coach were like so excited for me, but I just wanted to win the next fight. That's all I cared about. I didn't really think about the loss to the Olympic spot. I think it's because I was also very young and naive, and I didn't know like what the Olympics really meant at that point. So
yeah. So now you've got a couple more years under your belt since then. And what does the Olympics mean to you now?
The Olympics, like now everything is kind of devoted towards the Olympics, which is so funny, because before when I was younger, I just was just like, oh, it's the Olympics. I, you know, it's a place where all the athletes go and you're on TV, you know, like I just never thought about it so much. And now like everything is for the Olympics. Like every competition is for the Olympics. Every time I'm training, I'm thinking, you know, I want to be at the Olympics. I want to, you know, I want the Olympic dream, being on the Olympic podium, and to like show that all my work was meant for something. So yeah, now it's just a total different shift, I guess, in my life.
And do you keep your goals written down, or do you have like motivation boards, or how do you sort of keep yourself focused and determined, you know, for training and like in the moments when things are tough?
Yeah, when, you know, you have to just set small goals for yourself every single day. That's what I try to do. I just set like I call them like process goals. So you like set a small goal before training so you can, you know, work on that goal during training. My little bit bigger goals, like, you know, competitions that are coming up soon. And then I also have like the ultimate goal, which is the Olympics. So I like setting smaller goals. It's like walking up the stairs, you know, so like you're getting closer and closer if you set smaller goals for yourself instead of just reaching for the big goal, because it's hard to get there. It's hard to get there without climbing that mountain. So,
yeah,
and then you fall, then you fall down a couple times, but you have to pick yourself up and keep going. So yeah, it's better to write small goals for yourself.
Can you give us an example of maybe some of the small goals you've written for yourself this week?
This week, it's just very simple. It's just like, you know, like one of my goals is to like listen to my coach more, because my coach, who is my husband, by the way, he always says I don't listen. He says I don't listen enough. So like my whole, I've been trying really, really hard to like listen more and to follow the directions he gives me. So that's like one of my main goals that I put every day for practice. And then I go, okay, today I want to work on doing more one-handed tayos, or I want to do more transition into Niwaza when I'm doing Randori. So it's those kind of, it's just very small technical goals that I want to work on for myself, or being more aggressive, trying to throw in the first 10 seconds of the fight. Like I just set like those kind of goals for myself before training.
Yeah, no, that's so good. You also mentioned before that, you know, throughout the last couple of years in chasing the, you know, the training and the quality of partners and coaching that you need, that you've moved across to Germany. So when did you decide to move, and what was it like to pack up your life and fly across to the other side of the world?
You know, I moved to Germany because my husband, he actually is a coach for the German Judo Federation. So I'm actually very lucky that I get to train here because he works here. So I'm allowed to train at their Olympic training centers and work with them and everything. So yeah, so I got married in 2017.
Yeah.
And since then I've been living in Germany. So yeah, it's because of my husband. So it's been really, it's really nice that, because it really keeps me focused, and there's a lot more training partners here than in the US. So it's really, really good.
Did you speak German when you first moved over?
Actually, I don't speak any German.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, you know, I have like 5 words I know, but yeah, it's like really bad. Everyone who lives here, they're like, what is wrong with you? How come you don't speak German?
Oh, wow.
And so, that's another goal I have in my life.
So do they speak a lot of English, or you just do signals, or, you know?
They speak English, and I think it's like faster for them to speak English to me than it is to me to try to make any kind of German sentence. At this point right now, I'm just focusing on judo, and I also study, so I'm focusing on that. But I promised them that, you know, after everything's over, I'm going to take some German classes so I can communicate.
Oh wow, that's actually so funny. Oh, what are you studying, by the way? Because I saw that you posted you're close to finishing a bachelor degree. What are you studying?
Yes, I'm studying business communications. So I really want to get a job in social media mainly, but you kind of can go anywhere with this degree, so it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so current as well. I've actually noticed across the judo athletes on social media, you're one of the athletes that seems to be pretty good at using platforms. What's the importance nowadays of sharing your story online as an athlete, especially as a self-funded athlete as well?
Yeah, you know, this is so crazy. I made a Facebook fan page in like 2011 when it wasn't even like popular, like no one even knew what it was. And I built, like, I just, you know, would share my trainings, my stories of when I'm traveling. And I started creating people started actually following me and when they were interested in like what I was doing. So I just kept it going, I guess. But now I have like a bigger fan base. Like I think I have like 25,000 people that follow me, which is crazy on Facebook for judo, you know, it's crazy. And yeah. I haven't like won any Olympic medals or anything. And you know, I'm not famous in my country, so it's pretty cool. But also keeps me motivated to like share my stories and share my, you know, my trainings. You know, people also give you feedback and they send you messages and they're like, oh, like I've been following you since then and I really believe in you, keep it up. And, you know, it's another part that keeps me in a positive mindset.
Oh, that's so great. It sounds like you've had a positive experience with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to get some weird people like saying things to you, but you know, like that, these people don't know me, you know, like they can say whatever they want, but I know who I am. And, you know, and the majority of people, they're very positive. And, you know, I also get those messages that say, oh, I love you, I want to marry you, you know, so it's, I get a lot of different messages. Say, so those are funny. Those are the funny ones. But I don't let the haters, you know, bring me down, because they have no idea like what I'm doing in my life and how hard I'm working every day. So the only people I really care about are the ones in my life, you know, and they see me every day, and those are the ones that really matter to me. So not what people say.
I guess being a judo athlete as well, often it being a self-funded journey, has it been helpful for you to get partnerships and sponsorship?
Yeah, you know, I used to put all the, I still do, but I haven't done it like in recent times, but doing like, you know, Make a Champ campaigns or GoFundMe campaigns. People are like really nice and they're willing to help you out, but not like every week. So you can't post those every week, even though you do need money every week when you're traveling almost every weekend. But yeah, I've also, you know, had some partnerships with like some small companies that want to work with me. And, you know, I've gotten like some, you know, not necessarily money from them, but, you know, they always, you know, sending me supplies, like we'll say like protein powder. And I have like a partnership with this Phrase Skincare. It's really nice. Companies have reached out to me because they want me to, you know, post their stuff, and they see like people follow me and are very interactive with my social media. So it's really cool because I love getting free stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So they reach out to you.
Yeah. Usually, yeah. I actually, like my husband, he yells at me. He's like, you need to reach out more. You need to be more proactive. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But yeah, they usually reach out. They reach out to me. And that's also very nice. You know, I don't do it that much work. Yeah, they ask you to be like an ambassador, and I'm like, yeah, sure. If I like their product, I usually say yes. But if I don't like their product, then I don't accept.
Yeah. And has your business communications degree helped you much through this process?
You know, I was doing psychology. So I switched my major so many times because I, you know, was in and out of school for the last 10 years. But yeah. I've been into social media for so long, and I was like, well, I'm really good at this. And everyone around me, like on the judo team, like, oh, Hannah's the one that's always on social media. She's really good at this. So actually, a couple years ago, I decided to switch to communications because I was doing psychology before. I was like, wow, I'm actually really good at this. I could, you know, make a job out of this eventually because it's such a big market and it's growing every day. So I was like, all right, let me try it since I'm good at it and it's really fun. So I was actually the opposite way around, you know.
Okay, I feel like we should probably circle back to judo. That was really interesting though, and I feel like a lot of upcoming judoka can probably get a lot out of hearing your insights on social media and how they can use that to help their judo careers as well.
Hey there listeners, just taking a brief break to let you know that I have started a Patreon account. This means that if you enjoy tuning in and want to show your appreciation for the Judo Edit podcast, you can chip in $3 per month to help me keep the podcast going. Head over to patreon.com/thejudoedit or click on the link in the description below. As a bonus, if you become a supporter on Patreon, you'll get to find out which guests are coming up for the next episode and also have the opportunity to submit questions that you would like that guest to answer. Secondly, shout out to Ippon Photos for providing the image for this episode. Head over to Ippon Photos on Facebook to see more of his talent. Now, back to the show.
You travel a lot, obviously, for competitions and for training. How many countries do you reckon you've been to throughout your career?
I have been to 50 countries.
Wow.
50. Yeah.
That's a lot of countries. That's like, a sixth of the countries in the world or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's crazy. I have like a list on my phone to all the lists of all the countries I've been. They don't forget when I'm older.
Yeah,
I can
tell
everyone.
What have been some of like the strangest travel experiences you've had? Have there been any that are so strange they stick in your mind?
You know, it's so crazy. I wish I wrote down like these crazy moments because I've had so many. And now like all my trips kind of like blur into one, which is like really horrible. But I don't know, like every trip there's always something strange in every trip.
If you were to choose any for a holiday destination to return to, which one would you go to?
Ooh, that's a good one. You know, actually, I would like to go to Australia. I was in Australia in November. I was in Perth.
Oh,
for,
yeah.
Oceania. Yeah, and I really want, I would like to wish, I wish I could have stayed longer and traveled around more because I really liked Australia and I've always wanted to go to Australia and I didn't get to spend so much time there. I spent like a week there, but I'd like to go like to Sydney and Melbourne and like, I don't know, I would really like to travel Australia more. It is so far away, so I wish I stayed there longer.
next time come to Australia and we can grab a coffee. I'll share your coffee.
Yes. Where are you from? From Australia?
I'm in Sydney.
Ah, perfect. Yeah, all right. That's good to know. I have a contact now in Sydney.
Sure. What's it like to go to an Olympic level training camp, does it still give you butterflies?
You know, I used to be so scared when I was like, maybe even like 5-6 years ago, I was also like always so nervous the first day because, you know, the top, all the, you know, the Japanese were there and the top level people were there. But now, you know, I see all the same girls like every training camp and we all see each other in every, you know, competition. So it's like, it's just another day, you know, and it's not as overwhelming as it was when I was younger. Also, like, I think I go to so many more training camps than I ever used to, because in the USA, when I was living in the USA, like, it was very expensive and far and really hard for me to travel all the time to do training camps. So now that I'm in the middle of Europe, I'm always at training camp. I feel like I'm in a training camp like every month. It's become like this normal for me now.
Has it almost become something that you look forward to now because you get to see these other people that you're friends with as well as training partners?
Yeah, sometimes. It depends on where we are. Like, sometimes if we're, like, not in the best of country, then I'm, you know, not as excited. But, you know, if we go to, like, Spain or something, yeah, I'm all for it. It's really fun, you know. If you do judo, then you go on the beach after. It's exactly, you know, it's perfect.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've mentioned in previous interviews that you really like Neiwaza. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
So were you always good at Neiwaza, or did you have to sort of work on it and develop it?
My coach in New York, Jason Morris, he like forced me to do Neiwaza. I every time when there was Neiwaza, I would like talk and fool around, and like I like just hated it. Like I didn't like it. Like, it's not fun, you know. You don't throw, like, throwing is like the best part of doing judo, you know. But yeah. He made me, like, literally made me do Neiwaza for, like, hours and hours and hours. And he's like, this is how you're going to win. This is how you're going to win. Like, no one, you know, like, he's like, you know, it's easier to win a Neiwaza than it is standing. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, like, every day, like, it was, like, a big fight with him. Like, I didn't want to do it. And then I injured my knee. Mm-hmm. And I really couldn't do so much standing stuff. So I focused a lot on Neiwaza. And, you know, I ended up one of my main international, like, my big, like, Grand Prix medals, like, mainly just doing Neiwaza. Like, my last Grand Prix medal I won, which was like 2 years ago, but every match I won was in Neiwaza. So I think I have more Neiwaza wins than throwing, than wins standing. It's just, my coach was like, so he was just like, you need to do Neiwaza. Like, he just would make me do it, and like, yeah, I would fight him, but I had to listen to my coach, so I would do what he said. But the whole time I was like rolling my eyes and saying, this isn't gonna work. And then, you know, my first few wins, he was like, oh, look, it's Neiwaza, you know. But I'm happy, and now I like love Neiwaza. Like, I'm so comfortable doing Neiwaza, and it's everyone, you know, I train with, like, some juniors, they're like, oh, you're so good at Neiwaza, why are you so good? And I'm like, oh, you have no idea,
yeah, all the hours that have gone into it. So what was that training like? Was it like a lot of just randori and a lot of rolling, or was it drills, or like practicing various sequences?
It's just doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. Just doing drills. And then then doing, of course, Neiwaza, randori, but mainly just doing drills for many hours.
If we look at, like, the drill to randori ratio, approximately what is it?
I remember I would do, like, one morning I would just do like 1.5 hours of just doing Neiwaza drills, then we would do like 30 minutes of randori after. So it was like, we would do like two hours of Neiwaza sometimes.
And how do you keep track of your training and techniques? Like, do you keep a training journal, or do you video them, or what's the process there? Or is it all just muscle memory?
It's just muscle memory now. I've been doing judo for over 20 years, so... Yeah, it's mainly muscle memory. Like, my main techniques, like, I just, you know them without even thinking about it. And then, yeah, every day I try to, you know, not every day, but there's always, like, a new technique you're trying to do, because, you know, you have to surprise your opponents. And also, it's, like, fun to learn a new technique, because that's what judo is all about. There's just so much to learn, you know. You're learning something new every day.
Yeah, for sure. And so once you finish a training session, like, maybe, like, a randori session or even a technical session, do you have a process to reflect?
Yeah, I have a journal, and I usually write down, like, it's like called like success journal, and I usually write down like three things that I did good during the training, and then like three things I want to work on, I need to improve on. And then, like, one thing that I want to fix, like, right away, like, for tomorrow, like, a goal for tomorrow. So, yeah, that's how I reflect on my trainings, so I can make sure that I stay focused and I have, like, a plan for the next day.
For sure. Yeah, that's really good. And it's so succinct and structured, but also a super simple way to get everything on paper.
I like to write things down. It, like, helps me, like, to remember and to, you know, think more about what I was doing. And it's really important. You should really write it down, like, right after training, because sometimes, like, I wait, like, an hour or two, and then I'm like, oh, you know, like, what? I don't really forget the training, but, like, it's really good to write it, like, when you're in the moment, so you can really, you know what you have to work on, or, like, you know, remember exactly what you did. So it's better to write right when you're finished, but sometimes I don't, because sometimes, you know, you go home and you're like, oh, shower. Yes. Yeah. Oh, food. Yes. Oh, laying down. Yes. And you're like, oh no, I gotta write this. And then, yeah. So it's, I'm not, you know, as, like, adamant about it, but I do write my stuff I need to work on. And I do write my things I did well.
You mentioned in a recent interview that you find sometimes that maintaining your confidence can be a challenge. Do you have a process to use to pick yourself up when you find that your confidence is a little bit low?
So, you know, in judo, you know, you can train for your whole life or train for, you know, like a month for a competition, and you can go to the competition and you can lose first round, and you can lose in, like, the first exchange in a competition. And sometimes that's just, like, it mentally breaks you, because you put so much time and, you know, sweat, literally tears, and your, you know, injuries and everything into this competition, and you go there and then you don't have a chance to perform. And it really does knock you down, because, you know, you go there expecting something great and then you don't perform. So it does break your confidence. And, you know, I have been going through a rough time these past few months with like my competitions. It's just, you know, it's part of judo. Being able to pick yourself up is, I think, it's, like, one of the hardest things ever. You need to, like, find your true passion for the sport and, like, go back to why you're doing this and remind yourself why you're here, and, you know, look at your goals, and not just the big goal. Sometimes it's not even about the big goal. It's just about tomorrow's goal. And that's what, like, keeps me grounded, keeps me from wanting to put my gi up and retire, you know. But I just try to focus on, like, my goal for tomorrow instead of the Olympic goal, you know, because if you think about that, you're going to go crazy, because sometimes those goals seem so far away, and sometimes these losses hurt so bad. So you just have to stay positive and, you know, also talk with people and talk with your coaches, talk with your friends, and just be surrounded by positive people so you can stay in a positive mindset.
Yeah, it links back to what you were mentioning before about having your process goals, having the smaller ones there.
Yeah, so it is really hard. It sounds easy, I guess, but it's really, really tough. And being able to stay confident in yourself and be mentally strong, it's, like, I think it's the hardest part of elite level sport, honestly. You can, like, it's so much easier to train and to go to the tatami and do judo for 2 hours and go to the gym and do, you know, whatever for 1 hour. Like, I think that's so much easier than the mental part of the sport.
Yeah, for sure. When you leave it out on the tatami on fight day, like, you're so vulnerable. You're literally bringing everything of who you are. And it takes a lot of strength to pick that all back up when it doesn't work out. So
exactly.
I'm in awe of you and how you've managed to sort of keep yourself so positive throughout the entire journey.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my teammates too, like, some of them, they're always like, you're the one we always look to, like, when we're having a bad day, you're always so positive. And I'm like, oh man, like, yeah, I'm positive, but sometimes, like, inside, you know, like, I'm going through it, but you need to be positive. You have to, or else, you know, like, judo is like my life right now, but it's not everything in life. So you have to just also keep it all perspective of everything and not let it, like, ruin your happiness.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so who are your role models, people you've looked up to on and off the mat? And you're not allowed to say your parents, because everyone always says their parents.
It's such a hard question for me. I didn't actually really have a role model in my life. I guess I would have to say, like, my first role model was, like, my first judo coach. His name was Jim Herbeck. And I looked up to him because he was always positive and he, like, really believed in me, but I didn't really have anyone I really looked up to. So I was just kind of going through life doing what I wanted to do. And I think it's really weird to say that, but yeah, I didn't really have, like, a role model or anyone I looked up to.
Maybe role model is too restricting. People who inspired you.
But you know, actually, I do have one person in judo that still inspires me today, and that's Sabrina Filsmoser. I think she's like so amazing. She's from Austria, and actually, when I was younger, I always was like, this is the person I want to be like. Just her whole attitude on and off the mat is like, she's someone that I wish I could be more like, actually. So she's my role model today. Like, I didn't have someone, I guess, so I didn't have anyone when I was like younger, but I always look to her because she's just so strong mentally and physically, and like, I don't know, everything about her is truly inspiring.
Yeah, and wait, let me just think. She's the 57 kilo fighter.
57, yep. Yeah, yep, from Austria.
She's the oldest on the tour at the moment, or oldest?
Yeah, I think she's like the record holder of the oldest person to win a Grand Prix medal right now. She's like 37, I think, or 38 years old. So yeah, she's awesome.
That's incredible. You know, people talk about in tennis Roger Federer being a similar age, and it's so great that in judo we have the equivalent as well.
Yeah, and because like before, everyone's like, oh, you only get, you know, especially if you're a woman, you can't do judo past this age, blah, blah, blah. But she's like, you know, she's doing it and proving everyone wrong, you know, so it's really cool. It's really awesome.
That's so good. And talking about, I guess, another really quite influential woman in judo, and especially USA judo, Kayla Harrison was one of your teammates, I'm guessing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
What was it like when she won the gold medal for USA?
The first time she won, it was so special. Well, she won two times, so it's both times are really special. But the first time she won, it was like so, I can't even explain to you, because no one's ever won a gold medal for judo in the USA. So it was just awesome to see her win. And she works so hard. Like, she's a workhorse. She's freaking mentally strong, you know, physically strong. Like, she 100% deserved it. And I was so happy for her. And so happy for our sport, because, you know, we never had a gold medal before. She did that, and then Marty also got a bronze medal that same year. So it was like freaking awesome for our small USA team. And then she did it again, like freaking in 2016. So she's just such a strong person. You talk to her, and she like 100,000% believes in herself and believes in everything she's doing. And that's like someone that, like, she is very mentally strong, and she works really hard for it, and she every day she's, you know, working on her mind and working on herself. So that's also like, she's a very, very strong person inside and out.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. And I feel like, you know, she's raised a lot of the judo profile as well. Looking back on your career, what are you most proud of? Well, sorry, let me rephrase that. Your career so far, because you're definitely not finished.
What am I most proud of? Oh, wow. There's like moments in your life, in your career where you like those moments stand out. So I guess I'm really proud of my first Grand Prix medal. It was in Mongolia, and mm-hmm. I traveled all by myself to Mongolia. There was no coach, no one else. And I also got in trouble by my federation, because they were like, I signed up really late. I just wanted to go. I wanted to go, and because no one from USA was going, so they didn't want anyone to go. But I like went behind the federation's back and went through the IGF and asked if they can put me in the judo base thing, and they did. And then I got in trouble, so they wanted me to like apologize to, you know, the federation, and I was like, oh my god, I have to come back with a medal. I can't just go there and lose first round, and I look like such an idiot. Like, I look so bad. So like I was there by myself. I had no one to warm up with. I think I warmed up with a 48 kilo Russian girl. I don't remember. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I gotta come back with a medal. And I did. I came back with bronze, and I was like, oh my god, it was just like, wow. Thank god I did that. So that was like one of my favorite moments, actually, because I kind of was just by myself, and you know, proving to myself that I can do it and I'm strong. And that like really launched my international, like, I think that like after that, like, I got so much more confidence in myself, and yeah, it was really fun to win my first Grand Prix medal in Mongolia by myself. So that's one of my favorite moments, I guess.
Yeah. Can you remember who you beat for the bronze medal?
It was a Mongolian, her name was Tumin Ode. I really forgot her. It was a really tough last name, but she was like a little bit old. She was older than me. Like, I think she was like she was like maybe 8 years older than me. So she was like, you know, towards the end of her career. And so I beat her for bronze.
So you were not only this like lone blonde American in Mongolia, you also beat the Mongolian, like, you know, fighter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. And do you have any fights that people can look up on YouTube that were your highlights so far in your career that you are sort of really proud of?
On YouTube, there's like a Nawaza video of me, like, of like some of my Nawaza highlights, and yeah. those are really cool to see, because really you can see different like techniques as well, not just like one technique.
all the outcomes of all of your hours of drilling in one video.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that's the one that everyone should look at, the Nawaza highlight one of me. But some, you know, some of my fights that I lost, I definitely don't want you guys to see those. Some of them are not the best.
Okay, only the Nawaza highlights video, guys.
So let's do the Nawaza highlight one.
Make sure to link that below as well. And I don't want to ask the question, what would you have done differently? Because it's a very, like, a sort of circular question, because if you had done something differently years ago, miss out on all the lessons that you would have gotten you to where you are today. So instead, what is your favorite failure that you've had so far? Like a failure that sort of you learnt from, it sort of changed your outlook, or it shaped you to become a better person or to a better judo player. What's your favorite failure?
Oh, wow. Oh, man. You know, because so there's a lot of failures in sport, and so many lead you to where to different parts, you know, different areas of your life. I guess like not making the Olympic team in 2016 was a really big failure for me, because I did not listen. So I had to get knee surgery in the beginning of 2016. My meniscus was I tore it in the Paris Grand Slam. Yeah. And I didn't listen. So this is where I'm coming back with the not listening thing. I didn't listen to my coach. And I decided to like come back too early, mm-hmm. and go to more competitions, because I was just on the limit of making the team. Mm-hmm. And I came back like I think like you need like 8 weeks of recovery after meniscus surgery. And I came back like after 5 weeks, and I went to compete in like Georgia and Turkey. Yeah. And I wasn't ready. I couldn't even walk down the stairs properly. So I was not ready to compete, but I still competed, and I should have stayed home, and I should have focused more on my recovery and focused more on the Pan American Championships, which was, I needed to get a bronze medal at the Pan American Championships, and I ended up getting fifth. So I was mm-hmm. very close. So I think, you know, if I listened to my coaches and stayed home and, you know, did my proper recovery, maybe I can say it, maybe I would have been more prepared for the Pan American Championships and gotten that bronze medal, and maybe it would have been on my first Olympic team. But it's all about a bunch of maybes, so I can't really say if that would have made the difference, but yeah. You never know, you know. I definitely do regret that a little bit, so.
Yeah, but the key thing is that you've learned from it, right?
Yeah, you got to listen more, but I still, every day, I'm still dealing with the listening part, listening to the coaches. they know better than you.
For sure. And if people want to follow you or support your journey, where's the best place online for them to find you or to follow you?
So my Facebook, I have a fan page. It's like facebook.com/judohannah. And then there's my Instagram, which is hannah.martin910. And that's my Instagram page.
Awesome. And I love that you've actually spelt that out and made it really clear. Your podcast experience is showing that.
Oh, thanks.
And my very last question, you know, after all these years doing judo, does your father now believe that you're as tough as your brother and that females can do judo too?
Oh yeah. My dad now, if I go to the gym with him, he's like stopping everyone and saying, oh, this is my daughter. She's this and this, and she's really strong, and she's this judo champion, blah, blah, blah. So he is super proud of me now, and it's so cute. I love it.
That's awesome. Does he go to watch your matches as well?
He tunes in online, because, you know, we're all over the world. So he like gets up, you know, at like, I don't know, 2 a.m, 3 a.m, who knows, and watches me if he can. So I think it's like really cute now, because yeah, he's a big supporter.
For sure. Oh, I love that. Well, it's been great hearing about your journey, and I can't wait to see how you go in Russia and in these next competitions.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in and listening to that episode with Hannah Martin. I sure hope you enjoyed it and got something out of it, whether it be inspiration, entertainment, or just tips on how to update your own training. Don't forget, if you have appreciated the Judo Edit podcast so far and want to chip in to support us, go to patreon.com/thejudoedit or click on the link below. Every little part is appreciated, so thank you so much. Until next time, this is Melissa Budiato signing off.